This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan. This is our day to hear from Story County Events Coordinator Leanne Harder, and today she has a guest, Latifa Faisal, with the Story County Attorney Office. After that, we have a couple of surprising guests from Jefferson. So stay tuned, everybody. Now, welcome Leanne and Latifa. Leanne, you have news for us, right?
I do. And I'm curious to know who you have from Jefferson, since that is where I come from.
Well, you should listen.
I will. I definitely will on the way back to work. And I'm going to start out this morning by good morning and a save the date reminder for the Story County Mental Health Expo 2019. It is coming up Monday, September 16th, located at the Iowa State University Memorial Union, Gray Hall, here in Ames. This event is a no-charge event that features keynote speaker Jake Sullivan, who played basketball at Iowa State from 2000 to 2004. So make sure you mark your calendars for Monday, September 16th, and check our website for more information. And then your other monthly reminder that the Treasurer's Office has some new hours this year. They're trying some training every Tuesday, every second Tuesday of the month for staff development. They open at 9:30 in the morning. That was yesterday morning, was the second Tuesday. Upcoming dates include August 13th and September 10th. Another for your information, you can go paperless now for your tax statements. Included with this year's property tax statement that you received this spring were instructions to sign up to receive future property tax payments by a preferred email address. So help the environment by switching to digital, and you can check the directions again in your property tax statements that came out this spring. Look out, because there are a lot of events coming up for the Story County Animal Shelter this weekend. A busy weekend for fundraising for the animal shelter, and hopefully next month I can announce when they'll have their grand opening for the remodel project, too. That's yet to be determined. But the events this weekend start on Friday, July 12th, at Our Place Pub and Pizza in Kelly. There's a fundraiser adoption event benefiting Story County Animal Shelter. It's family-friendly. They have performances from the Robbie Michael Band, outdoor games. Animals Up for Adoption will be there live, and they will feature the Des Moines Skydivers, who will be jumping into the event. You can put those two together and see what that means. Saturday morning, then, they'll continue to help raise money for the animal shelter at the Ames Farmers Market downtown here in Ames with their ongoing partnership with De La Vida Wine Bar. And then Saturday as well, they can be joined from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Ames Petco parking lot. They and six other shelters are teaming up for Unite for Adoptions event. Fresh Time is hosting a grill out. There will be food trucks, games and prizes, and lots of great dogs and kittens and cats waiting to meet you. So if you're looking for your forever friend, there's three great opportunities. And if you've never visited the Story County Animal Shelter, it's definitely worth a trip to Nevada. We have several upcoming openings for boards and commissions here in Story County. These will become effective as of January 1st. They're starting next year, but we're now accepting applications through 5 p.m. on Monday, October 7th. If you want to see an application, it is on our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov/appointment-app. Completed applications, the directions are on our website as well, but here are the commissions and boards we're looking for. We have one opening on the Veterans Affairs Commission. The ASSET, which is Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team, or ASSET, which is way easier to say, has four openings. And of those four openings, the volunteers must be residents of Story County. The Board of Adjustment has one opening, and the Planning and Zoning Commission will have one opening as well. And another note on the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Code of Iowa does require that a majority of the commission members reside in unincorporated or the rural areas of Story County. So in that case, where you reside might be a factor. Then, last, if you are on social media, you can find out what's happening in Story County. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Story County, Iowa. And we now are working on our Instagram postings at story_county85. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Story County, Iowa, and you can watch the weekly Board of Supervisors meetings. Not streamed live yet, but just a rebroadcast. So again, this month, I am able to welcome a special guest, which you've already introduced her, Paul, but Latifa with the Story County Attorney's Office. She is going to share some information about the Fines Recovery and License Reinstatement Program. Welcome, Latifa.
Thanks, Leanne. Thanks for having me today. I just wanted to come in and share with everybody the wonderful program that the Story County Attorney's Office has been offering. This is our 10-year anniversary. We work with people who have outstanding fines, traffic tickets, victim restitution, and need a payment plan to get those paid off. For a lot of people, they've just racked up some tickets and are unable to get those paid before the DOT suspends their driver's license. And we offer them a program where they can get on a payment schedule, get their license reinstated, keep getting to work, get their vehicles re-registered, and just keep moving forward with their lives. So,
how do they come into your attention? You contact them, or do they contact you?
Both, actually. So we know what cases are going through the court system. So we're made aware if there's victim restitution, if a victim contacts our office and says they're not getting those payments like they should. So we're alerted that way. But people call us every day saying, I've got a ticket, I can't pay it off, I need help.
Let's say I'm a habitual offender, constantly going 50 in a 30-mile zone, mm-hmm. and I've had X number of tickets. What kind of numbers are we talking about for accumulated fines? What's your record?
You mean the typical person that calls?
Well, no,
the
kind of money they might owe, a typical mm-hmm. indebtedness.
Well, I mean, it can go. Some people have a ticket that's $150 that they're not able to get to take care of. And then other people have $1,500, $3,000, $6,000.
So they come in for a personal interview with you and set this up then, the payment schedule?
Yeah, they can come in person and fill out an application and get it set up. They can fill out an application on our website at the Story County website. They just follow the link to the county attorney's office. And they can also get an application at Ames City Hall, the Justice Center in Nevada. They're at the DOT in Ames and several different locations around town. It's a bright orange pamphlet. It's hard to miss.
Yeah, it's good color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, are they informed of this opportunity at their hearing that they can see you or deal with this kind of fine payment? They know that when they come out of the hearing, hopefully. Huh?
I believe all of the judges are letting them know at when their hearing ends. And then also our prosecutors let people know, you know, here's the pamphlet. If you need help getting this taken care of, call our office and we can get you some help.
You know, this is a great program because we always hear that a lot of people don't have the resources to mm-hmm. handle a sudden expenditure. I saw in the paper the other day, 4 out of 10 Americans can't handle a sudden need mm-hmm. to expend $400, like mm-hmm. a car repair. And so you're talking about quite a number of people in Story County who have faced with a substantial fine.
Mm-hmm.
They could never pay that in one lump sum. So this is a great right. service. I would think that most of the people you interact with are thankful they have an option, aren't they?
We have a really great relationship with everybody that we work with. I think we offer a very valuable service, and I think people are glad that we're doing what we're doing. Because you're right, there are a lot of people who can't handle a $400 ticket, a $600 ticket, or two tickets. You know, if you get pulled over for speeding and no registration or no insurance, that's a lot.
Well, we forget that people make mistakes mm-hmm. and people, it's easy to be judgmental and harsh with them. And I assume when they contact you, you're non-judgmental and pretty mm-hmm. about the task of paying off the fine.
Right.
This is a very humane treatment for somebody because, you know, we can all easily judge someone and say, well, it's all due right now and tough because you made these mistakes. But it's nice to know that they have that option. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have other duties at the county attorney's office, too? Or do you submit most of your time for this?
Most of my time is spent working with folks who have outstanding fines and restitution.
Well, there must be some satisfaction in that,
isn't it? It's great. It's great work. I love it. I love it. I really feel like we do good work for people. Because we're handling it all here in Story County, people don't have to pay collection fees. We don't charge any interest. They're just paying what they were ordered to pay, whereas in some counties around Iowa, they contract out, and it's a 25% upcharge. So I can't say enough good things about the program.
Well, Latifah Faisal is our guest today. She handles the reinstatement for licenses and helping people with their fines and fees. And it's nice to know that when you work into a government office and need help, you find a human being there who's compassionate, understanding, and non-judgmental.
Yeah, I think you'll find that all over Story County.
I think you will, too.
Yeah.
And I know that Leanne is non-judgmental because she never tears me down, and she always builds me up. And once again today, I wept during the Animal Rescue League segment. And if you bring your kids to that, what do you do if they want five cats? They all fall in love with these animals.
Since I've adopted three dogs over my life with my kids, I don't take my children to the events anymore. Plus, they're almost all, one is out of the house, the other two are teenagers.
Yeah, kids fall in love with that. And I know that as I age, I will eventually be an animal up for adoption. So I have a
And I will announce that, Paul. I will make
You'll
sure
see that I find out.
Then I'll cry.
We've had fun today, Latifah Faisal, and our trusty, regular monthly visitor, Leanne Harder from Story County. Thanks to both of you. It's been delightful. And keep doing the good work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me every month. Yeah.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio. And we just heard my co-host, Paul Wearson, talking with Leanne Harder, Story County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, and Latifah Faisal, with the Story County Attorney's Office telling us about driver's license reinstatements. So thanks so much to both of you. And now it's time for a most unusual pair of stories about Jefferson. Just over the line in Greene County, our first guest is Chris Deal, who was central to events that led to transform Jefferson and point in new directions for economic development throughout rural Iowa. I first read a little about these events in a recent op-ed in the Des Moines Register written by Representative Kahana of the 17th Congressional District of California and Tim Ritchie, President and CEO of the Tech Interactive in San Jose, California. Chris Deal came over from Jefferson to tell us why they wrote that op-ed.
There's a story that provides explanation for why Silicon Valley is watching Jefferson, Iowa, of all places. Our first interaction with Tim, with Congressman Kahana, came back on December 8th of 2018, when we had several from the Silicon Valley fly in to learn and to talk and to understand, experience what we're trying to do in Jefferson. Congressman Kahana was there. Tim Ritchie was there. The CTO from Microsoft, Kevin Scott, was there. One of the co-founders of LinkedIn, Alan Blue, was there. Several others, very, very successful individuals from Silicon Valley area, flew to Jefferson to learn a little bit more about what we're trying to do and how we're trying to really re-envision opportunities for rural Iowa, for rural America. That initiative is based on the bigger desire to provide more opportunities for our kids. And this whole thing started with a local schools initiative, really a school bond at its core. We in Greene County, so Jefferson is a part of, used to be Jefferson's Grant, now it's the Greene County Community School District. And two times they had tried to pass a bond referendum to build a new school. It actually would have been a big addition to the existing high school and to eventually decommission a 100-year-old middle school that we have. And those two bond referenda failed. And so as a community, we'd come together and really try to figure out what do we need to do? It was both of those were about $20 million bond initiatives. And so some of the feedback we'd received was that it's too expensive. They included things like a new gym. And so there's some feedback that we don't want to use public dollars to pay for athletics. And there's a lot of feedback for why the community had not passed either of those bonds. We had just gone through a consolidation. The Jefferson Scranton District and the East Green District had combined together. And there was going to be a closure of a school with that. There's a lot of challenges with those. So the first kind of challenge we were faced with was, how do we go forward? Do we scale down and try to find something that's more bite-sized, or do we look to something completely different? This was all 2016. So my wife and I had moved our family back to Greene County. It would have been the summer of 16. We'd been living in Ames for 5 years before that and had traveled around a little bit after we had each had graduated from Iowa State. And so we came back, and it was right in the middle of that second bond vote or the initiative for it. And so I'd gotten involved with that a little bit. That failed in September. And right after that, it was starting a program called Leadership Iowa, a program that's coordinated by the Association of Business and Industry, brings 40 people from around the state with different backgrounds, different companies, nonprofits, for-profits, but people who have shown an interest in addressing statewide issues, who've been very involved in various organizations, and lets them spend time together going around to different communities in the state. Each month, you spend 2 to 3 days in a different community, and you look at a different challenge that the state's facing. So, for example, we were up in Sioux Center, and we were looking at agriculture in Iowa and what's going well, what are some of the challenges, and how does it work? And so awesome experience, especially for people who didn't grow up on a farm. We were in Pella, Iowa later, and that was the one where we looked at education and what's going on with education in the state of Iowa. And we spent the morning at the Pella Career Academy, put up by Pella Community Schools, new building right next to Pella High School. So Pella High School students can walk out of high school, walk into the Career Academy 20 feet later, and have this incredible opportunity, set of opportunities for them. It's designed to align with what local industry needs in Pella. So Pella, as we all know, has a wonderful gamut of industry, from Pella Windows to Vermeer and several others. And so students at the Pella Career Academy can take a course in welding. And that welding course is actually taught by someone from Vermeer. And so they teach not only the skills, but the specific skills that Vermeer is going to need. And so those students all of a sudden get those skills when they're in high school, have the opportunity to roll right into a great career with Vermeer. They have a wonderful program with Project Lead the Way, which is giving some of the preliminary skills for engineering that they can then take and apply at Iowa State or any other engineering school and potentially come back and work for Pella Windows in the engineering department. A great program with hospitality and catering, a lot of just really top-notch programs. And I remember walking out after spending the morning at the Career Academy and saying, well, that one, kudos to Pella and the district for having the foresight. I remember the superintendent had said that a student at Pella Schools, when they graduate from high school, if they set things up right, they can actually graduate with their 2-year degree on that same day, roll right into industry, have the degree, and have this incredible opportunity. And so I commended them for that. And the next thought was, well, why not do the same thing in Greene County? Why not? Why shouldn't we have something similar like at other side of the state over in Jefferson? And the driver being very similar. In Greene County, we've got this really unique manufacturing base. And we're still certainly a farming community first, but we have manufacturers that send a unique array of products all over the world. We have up in Payton, Iowa, the largest planters in the world are made. It was a homegrown manufacturing company that then John Deere came and bought out, and now it's a John Deere facility. And then right next to that, the individual who had started that industry started another manufacturing industry that partners with John Deere on some things and is manufacturing items now that go into the manure management industry. And they're manufacturing these incredibly large forklifts for the steel industry. In Scranton, we have refuse trucks that are sent all over the world. In Jefferson, we've got a manufacturer that makes the balance beams that are used in the Olympics. We've got a manufacturer that makes the weightlifting equipment that's used in the majority of NCAA Division I schools, NFL stadiums, or NFL teams. We've got a lot of manufacturing, and we have a lot of need for workforce. And so this idea of a career academy really aligned with what we needed locally. And so that's what we came back with, and I remember coming back and talking to some of the people who were very active in the community and said, what do you think about trying to do something like this? And everyone who heard the idea said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, who do we talk to? And so eventually a group of four of us got together, myself, Sid Jones, who is the president of the local nonprofit economic development committee, Doug McDermott, who former bank president, also is part of the board of directors for Iowa Central Community College, and then Dan Bennett, who was one of my teachers and was a critical, did wonderful things in our industrial tech department. And so we reached out to Iowa Central Community College. One thing I learned many things through this process, but every square inch of ground in the state of Iowa is a part of one of, I think there's 15 community colleges. So Greene County happens to be part of Iowa Central. Pella is a part of DMAC. And so with the Pella Career Academy, they work closely with DMAC to get the credits and everything that the kids need to earn that post-secondary certificate or degree that they might be going after. And so we approached Iowa Central with the idea about doing a career academy in Greene County. There's a whole story there on some of the challenges on why it could work, why it couldn't work. But eventually we found a way to resolve those challenges. And Iowa Central was completely on board, loved the idea. And so we had this basis of an idea for what we could do that's really going to create opportunities for our kids, so these educational opportunities. And we were going to focus on strands of education, tracks of education that made sense for our local industry. And so those tracks included, obviously, agriculture and agriculture technology, or advanced manufacturing. So that's welding, but more than welding, CNC machining, the very advanced skills that today's manufacturing facilities need. Also a track in catering and hospitality, a track in healthcare as well. And using those as kind of a basis for our own career academy. Software, you may notice, was not a part of that. Computer science was not a part of that. It was only as all of that was going through a conversation I had with a client I had worked with previously. And so my day job, part of an engineering firm called Modus Engineering. We do mechanical, electrical, plumbing designs. Anything that goes inside of a building, we design them. And so I've had the chance to work with dozens of clients around the state of Iowa and around the Midwest. One of them is a company called The Forge. And so The Forge does computer science, so software development. They came to Des Moines. They are based in Columbus, Ohio, do a lot with the healthcare industry, do a lot with the finance industry, providing software solutions in the background for some of the companies based in Columbus. They expanded Ann Arbor because they're doing a lot with the auto industry, autonomous vehicles, some of that advanced software there. They're in Palo Alto. Silicon Valley makes sense. And then they came to Des Moines. And they came to Des Moines because of the agriculture industry and the amount of software and the amount of technology that's already in agriculture and continuing to expand in agriculture. So we had done the design for their space in Des Moines, awesome space, historic building, fit out, and they filled it up right away. And I was back. One unique thing they do is they will rent their space out, actually rent, they provide it for free to nonprofits that are hosting fundraising events. And so I was part of a team hosting an event there. Reconnected with the individual who had led the Forge office opening in Des Moines. And we were sitting down having a conversation, and I had asked them kind of what's next. They were very successful in Des Moines, already had started to expand the office in Des Moines, and I just curiosity, where are they going to go next? And so I expected to hear a big city, Atlanta, or something like that. And he said, you know, I think we want to go into rural Iowa. And I said, tell me more, because I had just, this is late 2016. I had just moved my family back to Jefferson. And so he started to explain kind of what they're looking for. And he said, well, we're trying to find a spot that we can create our own training pipeline, because they, like a lot of industry, have a hard time finding people to come in, finding talent. And so the idea is that, I mean, typically they'll go and they'll hire a four-year graduate with a computer science degree, a computer engineering degree, and especially if they're out in Silicon Valley area, they are paying top dollar, well into six figures for that new hire. And then they're spending 6 months training them with the specific skills they need to work at the Forge. And so they're putting $50,000-plus into these new hires before they really get any productivity out of them. And so the idea is, well, can they create their own training pipeline, treat it more like a skilled trade that then they can provide those skills, get students or get new employees who are younger and potentially do it in rural Iowa where the salary expectations are lower and you can pay less and still actually be, because of cost of living and everything, be paying more on the grand scheme or giving them more disposable income. And they're convinced that the same quality of design, quality of coding could come out of rural Iowa that they were getting in Silicon Valley. And so they were looking for a place to try this out. They also thought they had a pretty good marketing pitch too. As they expand into Iowa, there's companies all over that need these unique software solutions. And so if they go to a company like a Casey's, for example, who has, I can only imagine the software needs that they have for all the logistics, everything they have going on, and they have someone pitching them and saying, hey, we can not only provide the solution, but hey, we can provide it right here in rural Iowa. Like, that's going to resonate. And so they had this unique, really business plan for why they wanted to do it. They just needed a partner. They needed a place. And so I had asked this individual. His name was Link Kroger. And Link and I have spent lots and lots of time together through this whole initiative. And I said, what about Jefferson? And he said, where's Jefferson? And so I told him where we were, an hour northwest of Des Moines. And he asked, well, do you have a community college? We need a community college partner. And we had just had our first conversation with Iowa Central, with the president of Iowa Central. And I told Link, well, not yet, but let me tell you about this idea we have for a career academy and for skilled trade education and opportunities for our students. And it worked out perfectly that we had the partner in a community college. We had the K-12 institution. And actually what the Career Academy is a regional center. So not only is it Greene County students, but anyone who's within a 30-mile radius that's designed for those students to be able to come to that Career Academy. And so all of a sudden it takes a small 3A, large 2A school to use our athletic programs as a indicator and makes it a square in the middle of 4A size for a school. And so a lot of students that are a pipeline for the Career Academy and then a Career Academy that can provide the education to create that workforce pipeline. So that's how we ended up with a software development company in Jefferson and how this big picture idea came from that all of a sudden really started to pique the interest of Silicon Valley.
And so when did this open?
We are in design right now. So the Career Academy, they broke ground this fall. They are going to be, they're due to be open by next fall, so fall of 2020. We will hopefully, it's a Career Academy and a new high school. And so one of the choices we had to make was, do we just do a bond around this Career Academy or do we step back and dream a little bit bigger? And so we ended up taking the latter and came up with a plan that cost roughly $35 million, but found a way through a lot of different funding sources and organizations in the community that were really excited about the idea to keep the ask of our taxpayers at that same roughly $20 million level. But the high school should be done this fall. The office where the Forge is going to occupy in downtown Jefferson, that is roughly a month away from opening.
So how could this be replicated in any systematic way to other towns?
I think that's what's exciting about this is the idea that this is not something that can only happen in Greene County in Jefferson, Iowa. If you have the belief that the talent is there, and we absolutely have that belief in Jefferson and Greene County, and I think that exists throughout Iowa, throughout much of rural America, you need to have the right partners there. You need to have ultimately a talent pool. In our case, it's our students. And then if you have enough of them who are interested, I mean, the hundreds of students who have this opportunity, if we have 5 to 10 every year that are interested in it, that's really all we need for this to be successful. I mean, you can replicate that all over, and then it's just finding the right partners with it. And so that's the big picture that really starts to get people excited is, well, maybe we're onto something that can start to move the needle a little bit on how rural Iowa, rural America can be revitalized.
Well, you've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson, one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. And we just heard from Chris Deal, telling us about how Jefferson attracted the attention of Silicon Valley and built a career academy. Now, our next story is actually about a local hero from near Boone, Kate Shelley, who is the subject of a musical that will be playing throughout the area, and it'll wind up in Jefferson at the History Boy Theater on July 19th and 20th.
We are fortunate to have with us in the studio the director of Kate Shelley's Bridge, Michelle Levi, along with the composer of the music for this musical, Gershom Levi. Welcome to both of you.
Well, this is going to be a fascinating segment, and actually, Michelle, you might recount for our listeners the event that this is based on, the famous Kate Shelley legend and what happened.
Okay. On July 6, 1881, Kate Shelley crossed a bridge to save thousands of people who were on a passenger train. A bridge had gone down by her home. And she had heard that the bridge had gone down, and so she went out in the storm and crossed the bridge to go to a station to tell them to stop a passenger train.
So she did that at great risk in a big thunderstorm, and
yes.
She became a legend in her own time.
Yes.
What was the date on that?
July 6, 1881. She was 17 years old.
So she's a 17-year-old who did that at a time when all the heroes were supposed to be men.
Yes.
Right. So that's why she's a legend.
Yes.
And Kate Shelley is known to many people, but maybe a lot of our listeners hadn't heard the details on that. Now, this is the inspiration for this play and this musical. So tell us about what you're doing.
Well, Diana Starr Helmer wrote a musical that tells the story of Kate Shelley's life. It tells about her father, who died a few years before this event. She also lost a brother that drowned, and that's also in the story. And it just depicts the event that happened on July 6, 1881. Diana Starr wrote the lyrics and the script, and my son Gershom wrote all the music.
And actually, Gershom is here today. Hello, Gershom.
Hello.
And you are the composer. Now, you are 18 years old.
I am.
And so you composed the music for this musical. And how long has that taken you? How long has this project been going on for you?
So it was a little more than a year ago when the project came up, and I've been working on it. We finished most of the music and the singing stuff so by Christmas, and then I was mostly working on orchestration after that for, like, the pit and stuff.
So you're able to do all the orchestration and arrangement for this, and you composed original music, too.
Right.
Do you have a favorite song from the show?
I would have to say the second song, Heartbeat of the Rails, which is kind of Kate's kind of telling who she is song.
Heartbeat of the Rails.
Yes.
That sounds like a potential country and western hit. The Heartbeat of the Rails.
It's a beautiful song.
Well, you know, that's what I really like is the originality here. And, of course, from my age standpoint, I'm impressed that someone your age is doing this, you know, because, number one, you have to be musical, but you also have to have the understanding of what the music is and how to create the arrangements, and you do the arrangements for each of the people in the pit.
Right.
How big is the band?
Well, that is slightly different. We're traveling around, so we're trying to pick talent. So we generally end up having about 6 to 8 players. There's a couple performances where we're actually having a much smaller pit just to accommodate for venues, some smaller venues where a bigger pit would just blow the place.
Okay, now what kind of instrumentation do you have in your biggest pit?
So the biggest one we've had so far is the premiere, and we had a trumpet player who also plays French horn, primary French horn, and then clarinet, tenor sax, and we had an alto, very good alto player, and then Barry bass clarinet, a piano, and cello, bass, and some light percussion.
And each of those musicians had something on the stand written by you and arranged by you.
Right.
Isn't that satisfying to hear that?
It is. Although sometimes you're so busy you don't think about it. You're just trying to get it going.
Now, when you folks are actually in production and you're putting on the show, what's your role? Are you going to just stand there and say, I hope they play my music right? Or do you have a lot of assignments when the show is on?
So I conduct the pit, kind of keep everybody.
Oh, you're the conductor? That makes sense, yes.
Yeah. So, and I kind of pull the pit together. And in some different ones, I actually play some instruments to kind of fill in the parts.
So in each location, the instrumentation varies.
Right.
And it might be a bigger or smaller group.
Right.
But you're able to accommodate that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, when we talk about putting this show together, this has been a project over a year's time. And so the playwright, you're interacting with the playwright to make that happen. How did that collaboration begin?
Well, last summer, Diana Helmer did the show I Like Mamie, that some of the listeners might have remembered, about Mamie Eisenhower. And my husband was her director at the time. And she was talking about wanting to do another local show about Kate Shelley. And she was speaking to my husband about it. And he said, well, how about you make it a musical? My son is a composer. And that's how it began.
So this is a play that's been transformed into a musical.
Yeah. Well, she hadn't written it yet. She was talking about writing it. And my husband suggested music.
Now tell us what's been happening. You've already premiered, is that right?
Yes. We actually had a couple of preview performances at Frontier Days in Fort Dodge at the May 31st and June 1st. And then on July 6th was our planned premiere production in Boone at Herman Park. And so that was our big production that was on July 6th, the day it happened.
And it went well, right?
It went very well. We've had a lot of good reviews about it. And
I have a question. Obviously, in a musical, you have a lot of songs. So how many singers do you have for the
There are 21 parts in the show.
So there's a cast of 21.
Yeah, well, about 21.
So do you have a chorus, and then you have soloists, I'm sure, too,
yes.
Right?
And what about the playwright? Does she take the part of Kate Shelley?
Oh, no, she just watches the show.
She just watches the show.
Yeah. Tells the story of a 17-year-old, and she's a little
yes.
She wouldn't be believable as a 17-year-old.
Yes.
No, but I was kind of puzzled because she usually does one-person shows.
Yes.
So that must have been her original concept.
I'm not sure. I think she had a different concept for this than she had for Mamie Eisenhower. So,
So you were all collaborating on this, and it was born with your interaction with the playwright.
Gershom and Diana had most of the interaction early on and wrote it together. Well, she was writing the words.
So you collaborated on the lyrics of the songs and that sort of thing?
A lot of it worked. She put a lot of the lyrics together and had it ready to go. And so then she would just give me the lyrics and have me build off it, which was very nice because I could get this flow and the lyrics there and just build the music off of that.
I wonder if that's the way most of the great writing teams like Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe did that. Mm-hmm. The libretto is, you know, the lyrics. I suppose the composer would be advantaged to see the lyrics and then put the music to that. It would be hard to do that in reverse, wouldn't it?
That's a big question. There's a lot of people, that's the big question people get asked, and some people are like, just don't ask me that question, because sometimes it happens at the same time. It's kind of sometimes it's before, sometimes it's after, and so the music inspires the lyrics. And I work with Brandon Windus. I'm writing some musicals with him, and a lot of times I end up writing the music first, or I write a little bit of lyrics to kind of inspire my music, and then he does something much more with the lyrics. So it really works both ways. It really depends on.
Well, it's a fantastic creative process.
It is.
And to a layperson who's used to being in the audience, that's fascinating how that works. And it must be very satisfying to wrap up a song and say, hey, this segment's taken care of.
Oh, yeah, it is very satisfying.
Here's a song with lyrics that fits into the show, supports the show. And What's the timeline here when you do the show? The events depicted, are, does that begin early in Kate's life, or is it all built around the actual incident?
It actually begins, I think it was like 2 years before the event when her brother drowned. And that's where the story begins. At first, we just have a song talking about the railroad. And then we go into the story of, like, the kids going to school and things like that, talking about time at
that
time.
Well, that's a smart way to do it, because it's character development that precedes this actual incident.
Mm-hmm.
So we know who Kate Shelley is and what kinds of forces were driving her and what kind of things she experienced in terms of personal tragedy and loss that may have really, I suppose when you get into Kate Shelley's head, she's thinking of, I lost my brother, and tonight hundreds of people could die.
Mm-hmm.
So she has that sense of loss.
Well, and she also lost her father, and that is talked about in the show. The show happens after her father died, but it's talked about in the show, and she was very close to her father. Her father worked for the railroad, and she wanted to take his place, but at that time she couldn't because she was a woman. So she took his place on the farm, and then later after this event, she was able to work for the railroad.
Well, you know, what I like about it is you're teaching a history lesson. You know, we know the bare facts of Kate Shelley's heroic act, but probably a lot of people don't know the background. And, of course, that brings into the whole environment of Boone and those years and some of the things that were happening. Because the railroad was so central to everybody's experience, not only for passenger travel, but that's how you got the livestock to the market. And the railroads were very, very important. And Kate Shelley could have done nothing, you know. She could have done nothing. And she stepped forward, and she did that not only. It would have been a task to do anyway, but in a driving storm. And she had a lantern in her hand, I'm sure. And so basically it's a great heroic story that probably should be known elsewhere than Iowa because of her age. And when you put it in that setting and in that time, just a marvelous opportunity to share. Now we still have some shows coming up, so let's let everyone know what the next performances are going to be.
All right. Well, the next one is tomorrow evening in Perry, Thursday, July 11, at the Perry Bible Church in Perry, Iowa. That one is at 7 p.m. The next show after that is back in Boone at the First Evangelical Free Church in Boone at 7 p.m. Then we have one near Ogden at the Batten Chapel Church. That's an old historic church that's outside of between Boone and Ogden. And that one's at 1 p.m. That one we're actually having some food before that people can purchase, and then we're doing the show in the chapel. Then next week, we are at the Snooze Hill Winery on Thursday, July 18 at 7 p.m. And then on the 19th and 20th, we are at the History Boy Theater, and that is at 7 p.m. on the 19th or 1 p.m. on the 20th.
So you have a lot of show days, pretty busy summer.
Well, as interesting as this is, we have another little segment before we close out the show. And so it's a recorded segment, so we need to get it started. I appreciate very much your coming in, and it's been a fascinating conversation. But thank you so much, and we'll hope that we get to see one of these performances.
Yes, thank you.
Well, outstanding. Good to have you here. Good luck. And Gershwin, you might be famous, you know. Richard Rogers had more than one house, you know. He was pretty wealthy.
But well, a lot of people in Story County are not so wealthy, and our next story really comes from the awareness that there is hunger in Story County. And the program that was developed for that is called Food for Thought. And we have Gene Cressy from the United Way here to tell us how it got started and how it's happening.
Okay. Very good.
How did this get started, Jean?
Well, in 2012, the Hunger Collaboration was meeting on a regular basis and trying to understand some of the needs in Story County. And they learned at that time that there was one summer food service program in Story County, and that was at the Boys and Girls Club. So we knew that there was a need beyond the Ames community to have additional summer food service programs. So we researched what it meant to be a summer food service program, which is through the USDA, through Iowa Department of Education, and learned how to set one up. So we met with individuals in Nevada to talk about if this was something that the community would want and if it was something that they would support, mainly with volunteers.
Mainly with volunteers. So
at that time, yes.
So where is it and who are the volunteers?
So in 2013 is when we rolled out the very first Food for Thought program. And the partners at that time were many. There are still many partners. But we identified St. Patrick's Church Social Hall as a site where, according to the summer food service program, would be an open site, which means any child under the age of 18 would be able to come and eat, and we would be reimbursed through the summer food service program for that meal. So it was interesting because at that time we really didn't have a lot of experience, and the partners came to be and decided that we needed to do more than just feed the children in the summer. We also needed to engage them in some kind of learning opportunities. And so there were a lot of partners. And one of the partners, which you wouldn't think of that came to our rescue, was Heartland Senior Services. And they were the ones that actually provided the meal. So they were cooking congregate meals for the senior center over in Nevada, and they also provided food for the kids.
But that doesn't say where the educational component might come in.
Well, the educational component was we had individuals from the Nevada Community School District that were teachers that thought we needed to do more. And so we had about an hour, maybe an hour and a half of time that we could enlighten the kids and engage them in STEM activities, so science, technology, engineering, and math. We had literacy ideas for them to be involved in, reading and telling stories. We also had some physical movement for them that we did. We engaged Story County Medical Center, and they sent over some instructors to help us with yoga moves. So the kids were engaged in learning. They had a place to go for a little while during the day, and they had a good nutritious meal because, of course, Heartland Senior Services was cooking a great meal. Not all the kids liked their fish, but they all at least tried it once.
Well, of course, with kids this age, I'm sure that fun is one of the most important components. How did you make all of this fun?
Well, I think, you know, there's some fun in just being with their friends. The other fun was for many of the kids, they had never ridden a HRTA bus. So, you know, HRTA is the Heart of Iowa Regional Transit Authority. And so we worked with HRTA that they actually drove around Nevada and picked up kids. So it made it easier for them to get to the St. Patrick's Church at the time. And believe it or not, I had a day where I was handing out stickers that said, "I love to ride HRTA." And a young man who was 13, who I didn't think would want a sticker, absolutely wanted a sticker. So he was very excited to get his sticker. Another fun thing that we did at that time was had a lot of books donated. We had a lot of volunteer hours put in to actually level the books, so the reading level of the individual students, and we had them on a big table for kids to select which books that they would like to take home for their forever book. And I don't know if you remember the cartoons where the ants come and eat the last, you know, bit of picnic food, but that's kind of what it reminded me of. The kids all scrambled and just dove into the books. And by the time they were done diving into the books, everything was, you know, just a shambles and there was no leveling left. But they were very, very happy because they got to take home some of their favorite books.
Now, this has been going on for several years, right?
We started this in 2013, and then in 2014, the district wanted to be a bigger partner. And so they invited us to actually do the program at Nevada Central, which is the elementary school. So that was a great opportunity for us because we had indoor space that was separated so we could have classroom type activities. At the church, we didn't have that because we just had the one big space. We also had a playground with equipment that was kid level, and they were able to run off some of their giggles and do those kinds of things. And we were also able to expand it. So we went from 16 days to 24 days.
Considering the importance of getting kids to have nutritious food during the summer when other food programs might not be available, what did you do when the program ended?
Well, that's a good question. So Nevada also has a Food at First program on Mondays and Thursday nights. So we try to encourage families to go to that program as well. Actually, there's now two food pantries in Nevada, one at the middle school, and then there's one that's just next to St. Patrick's Church that's open on a weekly basis. So families are able to actually participate in those programs as well. So as we moved into 2014, we knew that what we were doing with kids and with food was important, especially that learning component. And so we partnered with the Ames Community Schools and developed a similar program here in Ames called Cyclone Camp. And the Ames Community Schools also had an academic component. So kids that were struggling a little bit in reading or math would come to in the morning and learn from a certified teacher. They'd have breakfast, they'd have their instruction, they'd stay for lunch, and then they had the opportunity to participate in what we call enrichment activities. So kind of the fun activities where you're learning something, but you don't really understand or believe that you're learning something. You're just having fun. So we've been doing that program since 2014. And then the Ames Public Library decided that they wanted to be an open site for summer food. So today, if you were a kid between the ages of when you can walk and 18, you could walk over to the library around noon and you could receive a meal.
Where are they served?
It's in the auditorium. The larger auditorium. It's interesting because the Nevada Community Schools, who eventually took over the meal preparation in Nevada for us, also do the meal preparation for the library's food, and they also do the meal preparation for the original site at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Story County. So they're providing meals for Nevada kids and for Ames kids as well. And then the Ames school program, which this year just ran in June, the meals were provided by the Ames Community School District.
Well, it sounds like there are really a lot of these going on. Now, I know that for free and reduced lunch, sometimes there's a stigma. Is there any stigma associated with it?
You know, I don't think so, because when we also have this program in Collins Maxwell, and Youth and Shelter Services is the driver behind keeping the program cohesive and making sure that they've got the staff in place to make sure kids are safe. So they've been doing the program in Collins Maxwell. This is their third year now, and it's now a 6-week program. And even though Collins Maxwell might have a higher free and reduced lunch rate during the school year, in the summer, it is about 28% that come. And so we have to make up the difference of those kids that we do get reimbursed for the meals and those that come that don't get reimbursed for the meals. And so the community comes together and helps do that. The Story County Board of Supervisors and United Way help make sure that the school district isn't losing money during that summer program.
But, of course, the most important thing is, are the kids getting what they need out of it?
Right. So we're trying to engage them in learning as much as possible because we know that summer is a time where all kids, not just those kids from families with lower incomes, but all kids might lose something during the summer from what they learned during the school year. And so we really want to make sure that that summer learning loss isn't as great as it could be. We're not providing academic instruction in Nevada or at Collins, but we are trying really hard to to provide literacy activities and science activities so that kids are at least their brains are engaged and they're thinking and they're problem solving. And so we're hoping that that continues because it has been a great program. We have the program now, the Ballard Community Schools now has an academic component that they've offered their kids, and they now too offer the summer food service program. So back in 2012, that summer, about 4,500 meals were provided. If you fast forward to this summer, 2019, and you think about all the sites that currently have a summer food service program, by the end of the summer, I'm calculating probably 28,000 meals will be served. Impressive. Couldn't have happened without a lot of community partners.
I wonder, do you have repeats? Do you have students who were in the program 1 year and then they come back the next year?
Oh, great question. So in Nevada, because we started with a lot of volunteers, even staff from United Way went over to volunteer. And I remember a family of, they had three kids that we served. And in 2016, those three kids agreed, their family agreed that they could be highlighted in our United Way campaign for the fall and have a great photo of them on play equipment. And I just have this vision in my head and they're all smiling. And I went to volunteer last summer at the Nevada Food for Thought. And this very tall young man came walking through with a group of kids. And I looked at him and I said, "Are you Alex?" And he smiled at me and said, "Yes." And he was one of those kids. And now he's a volunteer for summer. So it was so exciting to see him coming back to the program as a volunteer.
That is really a success story of how Food for Thought developed into a summer program providing food, education, enrichment, and fun for children throughout Story County. Thank you to Jean Cressy from United Way for coming in to tell us about it. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Latifa Faisal, Chris Steele, Michelle Levi, Gershom Levi, and Jean Cressy.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on KHOI at 89.1 FM, Mondays and Wednesdays, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online. That's at our website, khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also where you need to go to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening and
see you again on the radio.